This is your first fish.
I got one.
Father's Day, a day to say thanks to the most important guy in the world. This year, get him what he really wants at Cabela's Father's Day sale. Get 20% off Cabela's reels and fly reels, 25% off Sig Sauer Elite Performance Ammunition, and earn $25 in Cabela's Bucks when you spend $150 or more in store. Come to Cabela's Father's Day sale, in store and online at Cabela's.com.
Mental Health News Radio, produced by MHNRnetwork.com. Your source for information about our favorite subject, mental health. This show is brought to you by our incredible sponsors like ZenCharts.com, the intelligent EHR for addiction treatment organizations, ComplianceyGroup.com, making sure your behavioral health organization is following HIPAA and compliance guidelines. Remember, folks, audits are never fun, but passing them because of working with Compliancy Group helps you focus on treatment. EverythingEHR.com, devoted to helping organizations find the best electronic healthcare record software in behavioral health. And Service Dogs by Warren Retrievers, SDWR.org, a nonprofit organization that provides service dogs to those with unique abilities and invisible diseases, to include autism, diabetes, epilepsy, and PTSD. Until there's a cure, there's a dog. And hey, an SDWR service dog is at work every day, making a difference with one of our own team members. Our incredible sponsors help keep this show on the air and advocating for everyone affected by mental health. Guess who that is? That's everyone in the world. Thanks so much for joining us. Hey everyone, this is Kristen Sunanta-Walker, host of Mental Health News Radio, and I'm here with a past guest that I met at the National Conference on Addiction Disorders last year. John, thanks for agreeing to come back on the show.
Oh, it's such a joy to be with you once again.
We talked about your book the last time you were on, and just so our listeners know, this is John Bruna, and John, I'm going to have you share a little bit about your background, just so that any listeners that didn't hear the first show know who you are and what you're about.
Okay, wonderful. And yeah, just to try to make it as brief as possible. I'm John Bruna. I'm the co-founder of the Mindful Life Program, and I run a nonprofit called the Way of Compassion Foundation. Primarily, I've had this incredible opportunity now for the last 32 years of my own recovery to help people. And someone that came from homelessness, living under a bridge, to finding recovery, to becoming a counselor and a therapist, a school teacher, eventually a Buddhist monk. And the last 5 years now has been really focused on developing tools that can help people engage in their lives, you know, find meaning and purpose and reduce stress. And so that inspired the book, The Wisdom of a Meaningful Life, and the founding of the Mindful Life Program.
Now, how long have you been running the Mindful Life Program?
Well, we started that officially in 2014, officially.
Okay.
We developed a curriculum, and so we run courses through the Mindful Life Program. We lead retreats, and we even train teachers now. We have a training program for mindfulness teachers.
Wow. Did you ever think when you were, I'm sure you didn't, maybe you did. Did you ever think that you would, at your, you know, darkest times, or did you think, hey, I'm going to develop this, you know, training curriculum, and I'm going to have it be an online platform and write a book and all of those things?
Far from anything I could have imagined. You know, to give you a sort of a gist of, you know, where the difference is, I remember vividly having a coupon. We had a gift certificate to go to Kentucky Fried Chicken. Mm. And it was winter time. It was a Christmas gift from the sheriff's department. And we had two children, and we got in our best dirty jeans and our, you know, jacket, and we walked 8 miles. It was about 8 degrees, and we walked into town in the snow to use a gift certificate. And fundamentally, I just wanted to look like I could afford this meal, mm-hmm. you know? It was just a coupon. And in fact, it was like a big deal for us. And so that lack of worth, of value, of trying to just look like a normal person getting a Kentucky Fried Chicken meal, to, you know, the journey that I get to embark upon today, it's just beyond anything I could have imagined.
Yeah, and that one of the things that struck me, I did so many interviews that day because we did our interview live at a conference, and you were the most peaceful person in that on that entire exhibit hall floor. And I always noticed that because those venues are just full of energy, especially on the exhibit hall floor. And it can be very sort of out there energy because those are people trying to get business and you were just this peaceful, serene, centered person in the midst of swirling around you. And I had done boom, boom, boom interview, and you came in and sat down, and I like was moved to tears for your interview.
So, oh, wow. Yeah.
I hit it well, apparently, but but yeah, you just have this piece about you, so I can see why this is taking off. And now, since we met, I've seen you doing videos on, I guess, is it YouTube, or are you doing those as Facebook Live?
So we do a variety of platforms, and so sometimes they'll pop up on YouTube or Facebook Live or Vimeo, and the idea is to really, you know, be as accessible as possible to as many people as possible, to really help remind and engage them in this day that will never come again. So, you know, today with the technology that we have, we try to take these little mindful moments and put it out there in as many ways as possible.
Right. Well, we started to talk about, we mostly talked about your book, but then we got into this idea about what free will is and it being a skill. And I know you just did a TEDx talk and you're doing another one, correct?
Well, I just did one, not doing another one yet. The TED Talk is coming out in June, so okay. That's probably the confusion. So I did the TED Talk in April, April 9th at California State University at Long Beach.
Nice.
And yeah, it was a really, it was a joy to be there and a phenomenal experience. And so the video, you know, they record it and then it comes out online for everybody next month.
So do you get nervous before you do those kinds of things?
You know, it's funny. People ask that frequently, and it almost feels bad to tell them I don't get very nervous. My sort of what I teach is the fact that, you know, when we're authentic and real and comfortable, there's nobody to impress. You know, I just wrote today we send out a daily email through our Mindful Life community, and I was writing one for next week, and it's around this idea of humility. And a lot of people don't realize that humility is a byproduct of feeling okay about yourself.
Yes.
And so that when we're authentic, when we're okay, when we're just one among many and we have no one to compete with and there's nobody to impress, we're just there to help. And so fortunately for me, having lived this way now for over 30 years, that fear and insecurity and terror that I used to feel does not arise nearly as much. And so going out to the TED Talk, it wasn't one that was nervous. It was more about, you know, just trying to be as authentic as possible and be helpful.
How about, because I've heard many speakers that they're seasoned speakers and they, you know, they're on the conference circuit, for example, and they've got a pretty formulaic presentation timed with PowerPoints and standing in specific spots and during their presentation. And, you know, that's can be impressive for me. And the people that I'm around that speak, we just get up and emote.
Right.
And that's how I'm comfortable. I do not want to care about having to click something so it's perfectly timed with my or a point I'm making. I just end up and deliver information and whatever. So I don't get nervous either. And I don't feel emotionally charged after I do a talk because what I'm talking about is usually pretty positive stuff, and I'm a pretty positive person, but I have had speakers say that because of what they talk about, they feel the temperature of a room, or maybe they're projecting what's going on within them onto the people in the room, but they feel targeted, or they feel like people are going to be negative to them, so they kind of put up a barrier and they feel very exposed. So do you ever, I'm guessing by your that you don't ever feel like that after a talk?
No. You know, for example, the TED Talk, it was quite the opposite of what we normally do. You know, as you talked about, we tend to just present, and I don't have scripts or talking points. I have a general idea of what I'd like to share. But for TED Talk, you have 18 minutes. It needs to be scripted. They need to see it in advance. And they wanted some slides. So it was actually counter to how I normally would give a talk. And so it was kind of interesting that I had to really think about it and present certain things in a way so that, you know, they could be prepared for them. But then once you've memorized all that, it's just go out and ignore that. You know what you want to share, and you want to be as authentic as possible. And for me, what I did with the TED Talk, and I generally like to do, is for this talk, I just shared my most shameful moment right off the bat. And here it was with all of its blemishes and this horrific moment of my life and all the shame that came from it the night that I lost my daughter. And lost her due to my behavior, not that she died.
Right.
And I just shared it bluntly, vividly, and put it out there. And so at that point, you know, if you're worried about people judging you.
Right. That would be one of those moments, possibly.
Yeah, so you just share it right off the bat. And what it does in general is I find that people then root for you.
Yes.
You know, they want you to get better. They don't want you to be that jerk.
Right.
And they really are hoping the story, you know, how did it change? How did you get here? What happened? And so the metaphor that I used in the talk was about the doors that open and close in our lives, and that the doors that open and close in our lives are not nearly as important as the person we are when we walk through them.
Ooh.
And that when I opened the door that night, I was my lowest. And later I would open the door with my daughter on the other side and become a father again. And, you know, one of the most powerful moments of my life was having that second chance. And so, you know, by then you're just sharing a personal story. And so for me, worrying about what they're thinking, it's much more around being connected and sharing a part of my humanity with them in a way that hopefully is beneficial.
It's interesting that, you know, the word humility keeps coming up for me lately. So it's no surprise that this is a word that you would bring up. And I feel like I've been just really struck with meeting so many people. I always have met very humble people, and I think I am, even if it may not seem like it sometimes, I have no idea, but I feel like I am. And it's interesting how important that word is and what it actually means, and knowing the difference between someone who is truly a humble person and someone who is feigning humility. And I used to get really angry with people that were feigning humility. And now, because of the really humble people that I'm surrounded with, I don't get angry with them with people that are feigning it. I root for them silently, even if their behavior is really destructive. I think, wow, you're going to have to get to a whole new bottom at some point so that you really find out what humility is. And I hope that you get there. It's not like you're wishing disaster upon them, but you know that because of where they're at and how they're presenting themselves, they've got a few more bottoms to get to before they really know what humility is.
Yeah. I mean, if you really think of it as people struggling, because, you know, when somebody's putting up some sense of false pride or feigned humility or whatever that is, you know, that's always coming from a place of insecurity and fear of, and, you know, so compassion can arise hopefully at that point.
And the arrogance can come with that too. That used to put me off. It still does, in the way of I don't really want to surround myself in that person's energy, because no one really likes arrogance. But I, instead of just being angry and put off immediately, I lovingly love. I love them from afar because I don't want that in my personal space. But instead of getting angry and irritated about it, I go to, well, that's a sign of their woundedness.
Yeah, they're suffering. And, you know, people tend to share what they have. And if I feel comfortable and have self-worth and value, that's going to be something to offer. And if I have insecurity and fear, I'll have that to offer. And that usually shows up around pride and arrogance and dismissiveness.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, that real connected sense of well-being is one that sees our value with each other, our connection with each other. And I can actually learn and listen to people, you know, because everyone we meet knows more about many things than we do.
Right. Right.
Right. everybody I meet has more knowledge than me and an incredible amount of praise and have walked through things I've never even imagined.
Right. Exactly. I was thinking about this last night that I was telling a friend I was on the phone with. I told him, you know, I'm patting myself on the back that you're in my life and that a lot of really, truly humble people are in my life. I'm surrounded by them instead of there being maybe a 50-50 ratio, which is a reflection of what's going on inside me. Now it's, you know, 99% really humble people. And so I said to him, I am going to give myself a little bit of an ego moment here and pat myself on the back that I have the ability to see Yoda and know that that's Yoda walking around, where maybe other people see Yoda walking around and they see a green old weird looking dude that doesn't know anything and whatever. And I don't do that anymore. I'm like, oh my God, there's brilliance there. This person is someone I want to get to know. So that was a little ego moment for me last night.
Yeah, there's just comes to mind a quote by C.S. Lewis that I use frequently on humility. And it's, humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less.
Yes.
And I think, you know, that's a fundamental thing that is, we're thinking of others. We're able to be a participant with others, see Yoda, see the value in others, the opportunity to look and be open to all those things and people that are out there.
Yes, absolutely. So let's talk about free will being a skill. What's your definition of that?
Yeah, so free will is a skill. So that was the topic of the TED Talk. And my definition there, when I'm talking about free will is the ability to, A, consciously make healthy choices in your life that support the life that you want to live. Mm. And B, to actually be able to act upon them.
Yeah.
And those are two different things, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
So the idea that, you know, how much free will do we really have in our lives? That's the question I put out there. And surprisingly, I think, you know, a lot of people think they have more free will than they do. So the idea is, if you have free will, I mean, how much do we have? Can you stop worrying about something if you'd like to? Or, you know, how many times can you, you know, sit down and just, here's what I know I can do to improve my life. Here's what I know is healthy, and then not be able to do it. And so this idea of free will is the idea that I can consciously know what healthy choices are and actually be able to act upon them.
Well, it's all, yeah, and it's a lot about being conscious because in order for you to enact free will, you really need to be awake in as many moments as possible of your times that you're awake. Not that
right.
You can't exercise free will in dream time. You certainly can, but it's a lot more difficult.
Yeah, well, no, you're just hitting the key point. The biggest obstacle preventing us from having free will in our life is that we're not even aware of what we're doing most of the time.
Right.
So that's the biggest obstacle. We're not present. I mean, the current studies on mindlessness indicate that on average in the United States, people are not aware of what they're doing about half of the time that they're awake.
Right.
So that's huge right there. So if half the time I'm not even there, I mean, my mind's somewhere else, thinking about what I need to do or tomorrow or off somewhere. I'm not aware of what I'm even doing. Well, we're not going to have much free will. And during that time, all of the choices that we're making are habitual.
Right.
And subconscious. They're just going on autopilot. We're driving to work. How did we get to work? You know, all that was autopilot.
Right.
So that's half of it. I mean, right there, first we need to pay attention. So that's where, you know, step one, and that's in the TED Talk I highlight. Step one is develop our attention. Learn to be more present in our lives, because we have to be there to make a choice, right?
Right.
Conscious. And so that's, you know, that's meditation, that's mindfulness. There's a regular, consistent meditation practice. Even if it's not very long, but a consistent daily meditation practice can really transform your opportunity to be more present in your life.
I look at it like, and I've been doing this lately, which I love. I will lay down and I just start swirling my hand around in a circle and I picture what's happening. And I picture a lot of energy that comes out of me that's very, very positive. And I think about it like, okay, I'm the artist that's painting the picture of how I want my life to be. So when I'm swirling my hand around, I'm picturing all the things and all the people in my life that I interact with, and I'm sort of sending out positive vibes and what I want to see happen in the future and my relationship with them. A little bit I do that. Most of it is just me sending out good, positive energy. I have an idea of what I want, but I'm completely open to it being something different, meaning better than what I am capable of coming up with at this moment in time. And I notice when I do that, things just kind of fall into this wonderful place for me where someone on the outside looking in might go, you're not getting anything done, or this is half done. This is not da da da. And I don't stress about that kind of stuff anymore. I used to, but now I just really trust kind of the process of life. It's all going to unfold the way that it's supposed to. And I am making conscious choices and I'm awake and more than not. And things are just going to fall into a lovely place because that's what I walk in every day is something ending up being lovely.
Well, yeah, and let me just kind of reframe it in a sense, because it sounds like what I'm hearing is that you're taking the time to consciously nurture healthy, positive attitudes,
yes.
Right? And
yes.
And a certain acceptance to life as life arises.
Right. Much better than the way I rabbit trailed about it, yes.
Well, but fundamentally, you know, what we pay attention to becomes our reality. And that's exactly it. If I'm paying attention to, you know, what somebody did to me, well, that just envelops my whole sense of reality at that time. What you're talking about is taking time to consciously reflect upon some attitudes, values, and a way of being that's healthy and meaningful to you. And you're watering that consciously, so that becomes a much more part of your experience. And so if we want healthy, positive, nurturing attitudes in our lives, well, we need to bring them to mind. We need to water them. They do not happen automatically.
Right.
And now that's kind of the second point. One is, you know, if I want free will in my life, I need attention. So I need to consciously be aware. And then second is, well, what is it that I want to be aware of? What is it? What are the attitudes? What are the values, you know, that I want to embody in my life? And so that's something we need to consciously bring to mind. I mean, very few people wake up in the day and say, hey, you know, I'm going to take a little time. I'm going to reflect on this very simple truth that this day is never coming again.
Mm.
And I have this one shot at living it. And what are the values that are, you know, that I want to embody as I engage in this day? I mean, imagine how your life would be different if every single day everyone, you know, took a little time in the morning before they get swept up into the to-do list.
Right.
Right, and took that time you're talking about, took some time and meditated a little bit to just train the mind to be more attentive, and then brought to mind consciously how they would like to participate in this day that will never come again and what are the values they'd like to water. Well, then we've got a shot at bringing some of that into our day, right, and being more of the person that we want to be. And this is this process of literally rewiring ourselves. So neuroplasticity, people talk about that with our brain, right? We have habits, we have conditioning. Well, we can literally rewire ourselves and become, you know, more able to make healthy and meaningful choices in our lives simply by doing it more frequently. We need to develop these habits. We need to rewire and build new neural pathways. But if we don't do it, it doesn't happen on its own.
No, and that's so interesting, especially if you come from a trauma background. You get deep, deep grooves with your behavior. And thank goodness I'm surrounded by clinicians, because they'll say, okay, Kristen, I don't know how you leapt from this conclusion to this conclusion, but that is, you need some cognitive behavioral therapy. There's some rewiring that needs to go on, but I did go through a week of, what was really focused brain training, and I'm going to go back into doing EMDR. And it was so funny because I saw the person that I'm going to be doing EMDR with, and you know, we had our chat, and I hadn't met this person before. I really trust him. I specifically chose a male because it's just, I'm just going with my gut. And he said, "You're doing so well in your life." And he kind of looked at everything that's going on in my life. And he said, "You know, you're going to latch onto this quickly, and it's going to be amazing to see what comes of you taking this kind of positive action." And I think the point is, when people look at counseling or therapy or doing a mindfulness program, they don't to many people look at it like, "I'm so busy, I can't add that." They see it as a task. Like care, uh-huh. taking care of yourself is yet another task on an already long to-do list that we all have, that's overwhelming. Instead of, if you do this, it's not a task, it's a gift that you give yourself, and it actually opens up room within you to be able to handle all those tasks more quickly, more efficiently, more peacefully, and welcome a whole bunch of other cool things into your life. So I making helping people make that shift from seeing it as yet another to-do to this is going to help you manage your to-dos can be difficult, which is kind of what I see your program doing for people.
You know, when we think about the idea of how do you live a meaningful life? Well, you do meaningful things.
Yes.
And what's the biggest obstacle from living a meaningful life is we don't even make the time to ask ourselves the question. And we don't make time in our lives to actually start to embody the meaningful things in our lives. And unless we start doing that, I mean, it is a precious gift. We actually deserve to make some time to become the person we want to be. And
right.
It's so liberating when you actually make the time to start putting your energy in a direction that is actually going to promote inner peace, well-being, genuine happiness, and resiliency. And just the other side of that is, in our own busy mind, we're actually creating suffering and stuff. So we don't have enough time because we're too busy ruining our life.
Right.
With fears, insecurity, suffering, stress, and worry.
So absolutely true. And when we get into those spaces, we tend to project that stuff. That colors how we see other people and how we see the world. And then it just becomes this feeding frenzy, like blood in the water and sharks are coming, where you just live in this state of everybody's talking about me. And I just have gotten to a place where if I don't know that someone's saying anything negative about me, then it doesn't exist for me. Why worry about it?
Bottom line is, the more comfortable we get with ourselves, coming back to the start of our conversation, you know, I really have very little concern about what somebody's thinking about me.
Right.
And
or
you know,
saying.
In truth, we know that how people treat us is much more a reflection of their inner process and and values. And so my journey in life is constantly just work on not being better than anyone else, but being better than my previous self.
Yes. And that can be so difficult with a world and many people in it that focus so much on there is a piece of pie. And when someone takes a slice, there's less for me.
Yeah, and you know, that is actually the source of suffering. There's, you know, one of my observations over time now has been that there is no peace found in tending to the needs of me and mine.
Yeah.
It is found in tending to the needs of we and ours.
Yep.
And that is such a fundamental truth, that as soon as it's me and mine, well, then there's you and yours, and then there's only an X amount of pie, and I need mine. And as opposed to we and ours, where we're going to no longer be in competition, and how do we share the pie, and how do we get more pie, and how does the world get to be a better place? And now there's much more peace, serenity, and well-being.
I know. I think about that when anytime someone that hasn't walked in my shoes in terms of related experiences, like running a successful business with many employees, and they'll come in and usually it doesn't last very long, but sometimes some people will come in that are in that very competitive mindset and they want to immediately critique how I'm doing things. And I'm always taken aback, like, well, I'm open to hearing advice from anyone. If you know something that I don't know, please let me know how I could be doing things better. I'm open to that kind of thing. But living in that space, which I think is a very humble space, is I don't have an ego about how I'm doing things. There's always room for improvement. I mean, please share. But it's how one delivers the message as that takes over. If they come in with arrogance or nitpicking or critique, I'm going to immediately go, okay, I'm not going to listen to this. There's so much about how you deliver what you're saying that takes place. And I tend to hear critique, and I would think a lot of people do, much better from someone that delivers it in a loving way.
It does make sense, but there's also a very important invitation that you're bringing up.
Mm.
And that invitation is that when we're triggered by someone like that, you know, it's a really wonderful invitation to see where's my insecurity coming
Absolutely.
From, what's going on, right?
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, you know, it's when somebody gives us loving, caring advice, you know, we can hear it easily, right? And
right.
we know they're caring about us and they see our value, and that's okay. But when someone, you know, pushes our buttons, you know, then it's like, you know, we shut down. I'm not going to listen. Even if they're giving us the best advice in the world,
right.
I can't hear it. I
yep.
cannot hear it. And so who's blocking that, you know? And
right.
and that's this wonderful invitation to look inside and go, you know, why am I, you know, why? Because my feeling is an internal experience. It's not them.
Right.
And so there's this really beautiful invitation sometimes that we get to learn about ourselves. And, you know, I had an early training in my mindfulness that said, go spend as much time as you can with someone you find really annoying.
Yeah.
Right? And just be around them as much as possible and watch what arises in you. And it was, you know, a really meaningful experience for me was to realize, you know, this person wasn't annoying. I experience annoying because of my judgments about them, because of my own system, my own stuff. And a lot of things that they're doing that annoy me are things that I used to do. And I don't like that about myself. And it was such an incredible week of self exploration.
Yeah, I've had people come to me and say, you know, you recommended this person and we're not getting along with them and they've got these issues and whatever. And it may even be a group of people saying that they don't get along with someone I might have recommended. And I have to sit back and go, well, that's not my experience of that person. That's not how they behave with me. And, you know, I'll try to get into looking for reasons why maybe they're that way. And I can always come to an interesting conclusion around it, knowing an organization. It's usually in a business setting where I've referred someone and everybody's triggered by this person and they don't like them and whatever. And it's never really about that person. It's about whatever issues are going on with that organization. And that person is trying with all their might to get them beyond a certain place to really hear what they're trying to tell them they need to do with their business. And they're resisting. And that's where the conflict comes from. Even though they hired this person to help them get over the resistance.
Right. And, you know, so that's the important piece to remember is that whatever experience we're having with any person, any organization, anything that we're doing, well, what we're having is a subjective experience. And it is not good or bad or this or that. Whether I got enough sleep last night is going to have an impact on how I see
yes.
this person in front of me.
Right.
You know, my own belief systems, how I was raised, the environment that I, you know, the stuff I bring with me is going to have an impact on whoever I see and how I see them and experience them. They are not the totality of what's going on. You know,
right.
the culture at work, right? All these things, they all are lending to my subjective experience of what's happening. But we tend to think of it as, no, that's, they're an idiot or they're arrogant or they're this. And
right.
and nobody is that. There are people that do things that are arrogant, but they're not arrogant all the time, right?
Right, right.
And so that doesn't capture them. And, you know, there are people we find annoying, but other people find them funny.
Right.
And, you know, so they're not these labels that we stick on them. That doesn't capture anybody. It's always a subjective experience based on how I'm experiencing them in this moment, what I've been through, what the culture of the work environment is, and what these people are bringing to the table as well.
Mm, good, wise words. It makes it so I'm finding the older that I get, the more sometimes I'll get accused of being naive. And after everything I've been through, I'm so not naive about people. I just choose to see the best in someone. My brain is hardwired to do that after years of not being able to do that. Absolutely. That's not how the environment I was raised in was. Let's pick people apart. I wrote an essay about it, Vultures Licking the Bones or something like that. I won some writing award for it, but that was my family. And, I have this conscious choice that I've made to, man, I'm going to mine for gold with everybody. I'm just going to do that after years of not doing that. So it isn't naivete. It's actually very, I think it comes from a very wise, humble place to actively seek to see the best in another human being.
Yeah, and you know, it probably brings not just, it actually can bring a greater degree of accuracy and perspective. And that means that when somebody, for example, is yelling at me and they're angry, now I still see that they're angry and they're yelling, right?
Mm-hmm.
But more accurately, I recognize that they're yelling because they're suffering, right? Nobody's yelling because they're happy.
Right.
That's not how that works.
Exactly.
And so I recognize another human being who's struggling right now, who's venting because they are unhappy. And so instead of getting defensive, I can say something like, I can see you're really upset and I'm sorry.
Right.
And wow, what a different conversation we can now have, because then I can ask, how can I help? And now it's not blame and this or that. Now it's two human beings having a conversation, acknowledging hopefully some struggles that are going on and how we can make it better instead of pointing fingers.
Yeah, well, I've definitely, you know, can get an A for pointing fingers throughout my life. I try not to do that anymore or go, okay, Kristen. But I have this really great friend that's a new friend in my life, that he's so simple in how he states things. And he'll pick up on something and say, okay, Kristen, I've heard you say this word that's pretty derogatory about someone, and that just so doesn't seem like you. This person's obviously triggering you. Instead of saying that they are that word, why don't you just acknowledge that they're behaving like that word? And just that simple thing made me go, oh, okay, I hear you.
Right, right. And it's so important to, yeah, as he's pointing out, the label never captures them. Nobody's, annoying or a jerk. I mean, someone we call a jerk is also, are they a jerk when they're cooking breakfast? Are they a jerk when they're taking their kids? You know, they may have done a thing that was jerky at that time, right?
Right.
And but in order to really have that be a part of our process on such a regular basis, it comes from what I think you're talking about, is recognizing that other human beings at their core have value and are trying to find their way just like us. And when we recognize that and attend to that, then we can note the unhealthy things they're doing and just deal with them as unhealthy things they are doing, as opposed to that's who they are.
Exactly, exactly. And that's takes maturity, not naivete.
Yeah, it takes not only maturity, it takes clarity, wisdom,
yes,
perspective. It takes, I mean, that's the way things really are. Nobody woke up when they're a little kid and said, hey, I want to grow up and be a jerk.
Right.
That's not the way things work. Everyone's just trying to find some way to get their needs met, to be happy in some way, to avoid suffering. That is our fundamental nature. And if we recognize that, that's just true. It's naive to think the other way, that some people are just jerks. works. That's naive.
Yep. Well, I've dipped into naivete for sure. And now I'm moving towards the ancient wisdom side, gracefully and sometimes slowly and sometimes rapidly.
Well, yeah, we all are. We're all getting better at it.
Yeah,
we're absolutely. All finding our way.
Tell our listeners about your mindfulness program, because it's something I want to do. So how would one, well, what is it? And then how would one sign up to do it? Because this is something that you can do if you're in Tanzania, Kentucky, Alaska, Belgium, whatever.
Right. And my vision is to really to change the world. So no small task, you know, let's just go right there. One of the things that I've noticed over many years now of leading retreats and workshops and so forth, even my time as a monk, is that people will attend, like you noted, you know, we go to a workshop, we get some training, we get inspired, you know, maybe we read a good book, maybe we watched a TED Talk. We're going to be different. It's all, you know, I'm ready. I know how I should be. And then it's Tuesday, you know,
right?
And I'm back in my old rut, and like a marble in a groove, and I haven't really, even though I know that, you know, I learned this stuff and I want to be different, my habits are strong. Too often people get the idea to think they cannot change, and that's not the truth. In order to really make the changes that we want in our lives and sustain them, we need to push that little marble out of the groove every day. And yeah, it falls back. We push it out again. It falls back. We push it out again. If we keep pushing that marble out every day, as you talked about, setting an intention and a purpose and a meaning for this day, well, eventually that marble is going to stay out of that groove, and it's going to start wearing a new groove. It's going to wear a groove of the life that we choose to live, as opposed to the one we're habitually stuck in.
Right.
And so, you know, noting that people can go to retreats, get these moments of inspiration, but not be able to sustain them, that was the inspiration for the Mindful Life community. The Mindful Life community is a community of support. It's worldwide. We even have our own app. And the idea is that every single day, every member of the community receives a daily invitation, an email, a message, inviting them to take some time and reflect upon their values, the person they want to be, and how to engage in their life. And it gives them a very specific activity to do. Each week has a particular skill set. You know, this week is action. How do you put these things into action? You know, last week was compassion. How do I develop more of that in my life? But the idea is that every single day there is a group of people, a community of support for us to remind us, an invitation to take some time in the morning to set an intention, to do a little meditation. We've got a bunch of guided meditations from 5 minutes up to 24 minutes, meditations to start a day, meditations to help you develop attention, meditations on letting go, meditations on compassion, meditations, 5 minutes on acceptance. And this is also available on a phone, on an app. So the idea of this Mindful Life community, imagine all over the world, people waking up every single day, taking a little time for themselves to reflect upon how they would like to engage in this day that will never come again. What are the qualities they'd like to really embody, and then some tools to be able to do that every day. That's the Mindful Life community. And I want to grow this all over the world. I really think that, you know, this is a potential for really shifting and changing the world, is to have us engage in it in a more meaningful way for ourselves and for our communities.
I think
I'm a little passionate.
Yeah, you are. And I love that, because I am too. And sometimes people will be like, okay, Kristen, we get it. You're passionate. But I can't imagine my life not being this way. So it works for me. And I can tell it works for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I invite people to go to the mindfullifecommunity.org, Mindful Life Community. You can sign up. It's super cheap. It's, you know, $10 a month. You can sign up for a year for $120 and $10 a month. I mean, that's not even lunch in some places. You can be a part of this community, have these resources available to you every day. And we also have a same type of community for people in recovery. I know that you know that that's part of my path as well, and I work with people in recovery. And so we have a mindfulness in recovery community, and that's just mindfulness in recovery. And they receive daily inspirations to engage in their life of recovery in real meaningful ways as well. And so for me, my passion is not just to provide information and knowledge. I really want to give people tools so that they can actually change their life. And you change your life by acting upon it. So free will is, yeah, I can recognize what a healthy choice is. But the second part of free will is actually being able to do it. So how can we provide tools that empower people to take the actions they know will absolutely improve their lives? And that's really what we're trying to build here.
You're doing that. I mean, I'm looking at your site and you have things going on in Australia, Colorado. I know that's where the home base is Colorado, correct?
Yes. So, I live in the mountains.
Yep. Since we're getting close to time, I do want listeners to know, though, when they sign up for this, they're just signing up for it on the site and they're going to get emails about this, or they can log in and do this every day. But they can also go to you in these different locations, or people that are speaking about your program in different locations. So how many places are, or I wouldn't want to say are you, is your program?
So we actually do trainings and retreats. We train mindfulness teachers. We lead retreats. We have them all throughout the United States and Australia. And there's currently a retreat in the Rocky Mountains coming up next month. And there's one in August over in California. And there's ongoing stuff in Australia. And there's courses in different parts of the United States. But the community itself specifically, it's not even that you have to log in. Once you signed up, you'll get these daily lessons and activities, you know, directly emailed to you. You'll have an app on your phone with everything. And we have online meetings. So wherever you are, twice a month we have online meetings that we all get to join on with a web conference, and people get to actively participate. And I also will lead guided meditations to start the morning randomly throughout the month. And then we're even developing more community meetings where you have more online mindfulness courses. I'm teaching one right now where people, wherever they are, get the lessons, and then they get to have an hour with me directly online.
Okay, that's fantastic. Good. An hour with you would be Prozac for many people, I think. And I mean that in the best way possible. Tell our listeners again, I know we've mentioned it, but the name of your book and also your website.
Okay, the book is called The Wisdom of a Meaningful Life, The Essence of Mindfulness. You can find that at, you know, booksellers and Amazon and all that. And the website, Mindful Life Program, has the Mindful Life community. It has mindfulness and recovery, and it has links to online resources and workshops, courses, and retreats that we offer.
Wonderful. Well, thanks for coming on again, John. I love watching the videos that you're doing. I just feel this immense peace the minute I see your face and hear your voice and hear the message that you're trying to deliver. So I can only imagine how many other people feel the same. So bravo to the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much. And what an honor it is to be on your show and all the good work that you're doing, really making a difference in people's lives.
We try.
I'm sure you do.
Well, I want to say thank you again for coming on.
All right. Thank you. A joy. And I look forward to seeing you in person, hopefully sometime
soon.
Yeah, at
one of these venues. We'll do that. Or I'll just come out to Colorado and do a live workshop or something with you.
Sounds good.
And I want to say thanks to our listeners for another edition of Mental Health News Radio. Please join us next time on blogtalkradio.com/mentalhealthnews. Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing from our listeners. Visit mentalhealthnewsradio.com for a list of all of our shows, and mhnrnetwork.com to check out all of our amazing podcasters on our network. If you'd like to be a guest on our show, send an email to our wonderful program director, Melanie, at mentalhealthnewsradio.com. And now a final word from our therapy dog, Miles.
Good boy.
This is your first fish.
I got one.
Father's Day, a day to say thanks to the most important guy in the world. This year, get him what he really wants at Cabela's Father's Day sale.
get 20% off Cabela's Reels and Fly Reels, 25% off Sig Sauer Elite Performance Ammunition, and earn $25 in Cabela's Bucks when you spend $150 or more in-store. Come to Cabela's Father's Day Sale, in-store and online at Cabela's.com.
This is your first fish.
I got one!
Father's Day, a day to say thanks to the most important guy in the world. This year, get him what he really wants at Cabela's Father's Day Sale. Get 20% off Cabela's Reels and Fly Reels, 25% off Sig Sauer Elite Performance Ammunition, and earn $25 in Cabela's Bucks when you spend $150 or more in-store. Come to Cabela's Father's Day Sale, in-store and online at Cabela's.com.